Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy, howdy, howdy. And one more howdy. Oh my God, it's good to be back. Oh, what a week. No good deed goes unpunished. Hi, this is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Wait a minute. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. No, this is The Horn. This is a live program. It is, in fact, the fifth day of September, the fifth day of September 2014. And yes, I'm Bob Kincaid, away after an unwanted sojourn of about 4 days. Like I said, no good deed goes unpunished. I took Labor Day off. We had a humongous storm on Tuesday after I had run Dr. Bill. And then goes the ISP. And it stayed Wednesday, and so I pursued some other remedies, and now we have competent ISP coverage, it would appear. And hopefully there will be no interruptions, and everything will be good. But God Almighty, I don't like being away from the microphone. And I don't like us not having our little conversation. This has been intensely frustrating. It was kind of like a mini. It was all the gamut of emotions I felt during the 2012 derecho, when for 2 weeks it was. Yeah. Oh, but so we will. I guess we'll try to make up for it in 3 short hours this evening. So this makes this Friday on the thorn in the side prayer meeting porch Titanic Moran Friday, something like that. Yeah. Head On Radio Network, of course, .com is where you go if you want to grab the live player or if you want to participate in the chat room. And hey, thanks everybody for being around and sticking around and coming back for our triumphant return. Good crowd in the chat room forming up already. Carol's there, Jan's there, and Jerry. Hey, Jerry. John is there, Kathy's there, Embrant's there, Sentient Being, Sergi, Tim from L.A., Truth Seeker, and Will in Chicago. Howdy, howdy, howdy all. Yeah, that was 4 howdies at the beginning of the program just to make up for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and take care of today. Yeah. Now, of course, let's just get this out of the way. This is a listener-supported program. The only way we keep this on the air is by listener support. And consequently, many, many thanks go out to Diane in Kansasstan, to Richard. To Chris, thank you so very much, Chris. To Gail, to Kelly, to Kathy, to Jack, to Ed, to Philip, and to Robin, and to Randy and James. Had it not been for those folks I mentioned, we may not have made it back to the air. It is that simple. Thank you one and all very, very kindly. And this being our first broadcast of the month of September, this should have happened on Tuesday, but it didn't. This being our first broadcast of the month of September, I can tell you that this evening there is a matching challenge on the table, as there is at the first of every month. It is time for Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Yes, indeed. Late summer has hit in Wisconsin, and Shirley is there like Shirley is at the first of every month. Thank you very much, Shirley. And so this evening, your money gets doubled up to $150. $150 becomes $300. $125 becomes $250. $100 becomes $2. $75 becomes $150. $50 turns into $100. It's math magic. Remember, after all, I did take a class way back when I rode my dinosaur to college in Morgantown, West Virginia, Harvard on the Mon, in Mickey and Donald in math magic land. So I know a little bit about math magic. And this is that. So Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table. And hopefully folks will take advantage of it. And thanks to everybody who kept us going during our downtime. A week of non-fundraising. A couple of days puts us in jeopardy. Because we exist on a month-to-month basis. That having been said, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. And so, too, is the traditional mail address. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower, like the President, Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And remember, checks and money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not see them. That is in the province of Boss Man Wayne, who, by the way, yesterday celebrated his 70th birthday. And I put up a post at the Horn website, at the Horn Facebook page, which you're welcome to join, the Head On Radio Network. Just look it up. You'll find it. Join up. You'll enjoy it. Lots of good stuff over there. And yesterday was the 70th birthday of Boss Man Wayne. And I didn't know this until he told me yesterday when we were discussing his birthday. Boss Man Wayne was actually born on Labor Day, 1944. Talk about a sense of destiny. Because a man born on Labor Day, 1944, has spent his life trying to make the working lives of people in this state and other states better. You might recall that a week ago we featured audio from a miserable jackass by the name of Mark Mix, who's head of the National Right to Work Foundation. Well, if you go over and look on my Facebook page, Bob Kincaid on Facebook, you will find that our friend Corey in the free state of Louisville in Kentucky stand has posted an article written in the Louisville Courier-Journal about that very same Mark Mix, and he is apparently a horse's ass's horse's ass. But countering that horse's assery are people like Boss Man Wayne, who never tires of trying to make life better for working people and who remains the motivating and driving force behind this independent broadcasting experience. Happy birthday, Wayne, and many, many, many happy returns. So what did I do with my vacation I didn't want in the first place? I got annoyed, and we'll get to all the news in a minute, and there's plenty of it. Aircraft flying over Cuba, crashing in Jamaica, F-15s being scrambled because we are a deeply paranoid nation. Not just Republican jackasses, but Democrats trying to get into the act of wanting to go and send some other person's son or daughter to fight in the miserable sands of Syria and Iraq. We got that. Got a story that came to us via Patrick, our friend Patrick in Germany, that will probably make you just want to scream a little bit. But because I get the sense that you guys enjoy the stories of my little odysseys, emphasis on the word odd, I thought I would share a couple of things with you. The first thing was that well, let's see. I had a doctor's appointment in Charleston on Wednesday. Got back, plenty of time for airtime, but we all know what had happened by then. But Ferg started, you know, talking a little bit like this. You know, he's all stopped up and he can't stop coughing and hacking and wheezing and sneezing. So I got on the phone and I called down to the local healthcare clinic. And I asked if there was an opening just so he could get seen and make sure he didn't have, like, you know, strep or Ebola or anything like that. And by the way, they ask now, even in West by God, Virginia, they ask, have you been out of the country in the last couple of weeks? Out of the country? I've been out of the county. So, anyway, so we're sitting there in the examination room. And, you know, in your average doctor's exam room, of course, there are no doctors there. It's all non-doctor people. I guess we don't rate actual physicians here. But there's all kinds of stuff. You know, there's usually a stack of old magazines that you wouldn't want to touch. But there's pamphlets on the wall. You know, you and diabetes. How to cope with your heart disease. COPD. You can still lead a meaningful life. That kind of stuff. And there's a bulletin board that hangs on the wall, too. And on that bulletin board, let's see, there was a laminated placard for how to prepare for your next day's blood work. Things like, you know, don't eat or drink anything after 7 p.m., blah, 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 blah. Couple other things, a Bible verse telling you to always be happy. And then my eye fell upon a cartoon. Just, you know, a single panel. And it shows this cartoon does. It shows an uneasy man sitting in a chair in front of a door, and through the door you can see a part of a casket and some stained glass arched windows, and on the door is written funeral home, and there's a woman behind the desk, and there's a little placard on the desk that says director, and this irate, distraught-looking individual is speaking. The words are written underneath, you know, it's kind of like a New Yorker cartoon. You know what I'm talking about. And underneath it says, I was referred here by President Obama. Get it? It's a funeral home. Yeah, that's how that. I was referred here by President Obama. Now, the thing about where it says President Obama, the words have been whited out, and President Obama has been inked in over it. Again, I repeat, this is in an examining room in an actual clinic in an actual town in the actual state of West Virginia. Did I mention that West Virginia is an extremely poverty-laden state? Did I mention that most people in this state experience some form of government assistance, whether it be whatever we call aid to families with dependent children or SNAP food stamp benefits, all the way up to the corporate welfare that we dole out by the millions of dollars to the coal industry? Everybody here is on some form of assistance. And somebody, well, back up. This clinic, meanwhile, receives thousands and tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million a year in compensation via things like Medicaid and Medicare. It receives even more money now because of the Medicaid expansion that was part of the Affordable Care Act, and still is, and which, miraculously, my state decided to participate in, despite the hue and cry of various and sundry mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, floor-rolling, strychnine-swigging, tongue-speaking idiots. One of whom, or perhaps several, apparently work at this clinic. Now, this is the same clinic where once upon a time, not too awfully long back, and I recounted the story, this is the clinic where I went for blood work one day and was informed by the person taking my blood that President Obama is a secret Muslim, and that this person knowed that because their preacher done telled it to them at church last Sunday. Oh, really? And in that transaction, went on to explain about how he wants to let the homosexuals get married, and our traditional families are going to fall apart. All this during a doctor's office visit. So, I saw this cartoon on Wednesday, and immediately snapped a photograph of it. You can find it somewhere down my timeline on my Facebook page. Frankly, it pisses me off. Talk about biting the hand that feeds you. Whoever put, and this wasn't, you know, this isn't like somebody left a Chick Publications tract in the restroom. This was deliberately tacked up on a bulletin board with other, you know, where important medical information is conveyed in the exam room. It boggles the mind. And the more I thought about it, the angrier I got. What if, for instance, you're one of those people who didn't have health care before, but now has it? Because, and only because, of the Affordable Care Act and the Medicaid expansion. What if you didn't have health care before and now you have it because of the Affordable Care Act and the subsidies for for-profit insurance purchases? What does that mean, funeral home? What does that say about the quality of care that a patient can expect in this clinic? Do you see what I'm getting at? That's not a rhetorical question. We can discuss it in the round table of extraordinary, ordinary people that takes place every Friday and Friday on the front porch. I really would like to hear your thoughts, your reactions, your suggestions. Now, also down at this clinic, there's a physician's assistant who prays over patients. Yeah. That's what I deal with. That's what it's like to live in West by God, Virginia. Michael, with a question. Subject line, blood work. Bob, now does this clinic use leeches or just prayer circles? Actually, they use real, live, honest-to-goodness, no kidding, medical equipment, you know, tubes and needles and the butterfly stabby thingies and all that stuff. And they even throw it away and don't use it twice. The same cannot be said of a pain clinic in West Virginia. This was a couple of months back, that story was reported, where the pain clinic was in the habit of reusing needles. Nice. But funeral home, I was referred here by President Obama. Because, you know, he's a killing us. He's a destroying health care. Never mind the fact that more people have health care in this country now than have ever had it before. And here's the fun part. Our buddy Tony went and used the wonder, the marvel that is the interweb tubes. You know, it's not a big truck. To seek out the original cartoon. And this is where it gets more interesting. The original cartoon reads, "I was referred here by my HMO, you know, health maintenance organization, which is a for-profit operation that was notorious for turning people down for basic health care needs." Which makes all of this even more complicated. Because for-profit healthcare really, and the lack thereof, really was killing people, tens of thousands of them, I think 45,000 excess deaths a year before the Affordable Care Act became a reality. And whoever did this apparently thinks that it's better that people not have health care than that people do have health care and come to that clinic. That clinic would likely have closed by now if it were not for the Affordable Care Act. The person who pinned this on the bulletin board gets a paycheck every couple of weeks because of the Affordable Care Act. We all do remember that One of the particularly valuable parts of the Affordable Care Act was the fact that Bernie Sanders put into it directions for specific monies geared toward rural health care clinics. But they don't like it. Somebody at this clinic doesn't like it. And because it is still hanging on the wall, probably to this, even as I speak, it means that the management of the clinic approves of it. And let me add to this by noting that this is the only healthcare clinic within miles of a lot of people who live in my general area. So it's a Hobson's choice of sorts. The horse by the door, or no horse at all. Scylla and Charybdis. And a lot of people around here don't have reliable transportation. A lot of people around here don't have the money to drive miles and miles and miles and miles to the next available physician, assuming that that physician is accepting patients. This, then, is emblematic of the kind of thing that happens in this state. This state is absolutely approaching a homicidal frenzy over that one in their White House. We might recall that back in 2012, a statistical study was done of Google searches, and the word Obama and the word that begins with an N and ends in an R and isn't ginger either. More people by a wide margin searched those two terms in West Virginia than in any other state in the union. In a way, it kind of reminds me of something that Atticus says in To Kill a Mockingbird. "Scout, they didn't convict Tom Robinson because he was guilty. they convicted him because he had the nerve to feel sorry for a white woman. This is that. This is that. And the that in this is just another damn day in the hell that is the loathing that the mostly poor, mostly bedraggled, significantly abused states south of the Mason-Dixie line have for our melanin-enriched president. Yeah, Jack in Shreveport noting the pain clinic. That pain clinic was reusing their needles until they found out that was called recycling. And, you know, we can't have none of that. Michael pointing out HMOs were sending folks to the funeral home by design, if you listen to the Nixon tapes featured in Michael Moore's film, Sicko. Yeah, there's no doubt. There really are death panels in the United States, and they are staffed by well-heeled people, well-paid people from the for-profit insurance industry. I look at the Affordable Care Act and especially the Medicaid expansion. I look at both of these as interim measures until we can get to full-on universal single-payer health care. You know, we recently had another, and you see these sort of little mini flurries erupt on Facebook and that kind of thing. We recently had another mini outrage attack over Burger King heading to Canada by buying out Tim Horton Donuts so as to avoid paying U.S. taxes. And it is outrageous, and it's unpatriotic, un-American, but there's nothing in a corporate charter that says a corporation has to be patriotic or behave in an American-like fashion. The only thing in the corporate charter is make a profit, you... Right. But in going to Canada, I was reminded that, by Jove, people in Canada, corporations in Canada, don't have to worry about paying health care costs because Canada has universal single-payer health care. It might actually be deemed a good business decision. And that's probably the kind of business decision that encouraged, for instance, the big three automakers to build plants in Canada. Their labor costs went down. People still made good money, but the company didn't have to worry about paying for health care. Obvious, one might think, but not to a Republican, not to a Republican, not to a birther, a tenther, a bagger, a booger eater, a bircher. No, not obvious. So I'm not done with this the great cartoon kerfuffle. I want to do something about it, but I don't really know what to do or how to go about it. Your input is more than welcome. But hell, that was Wednesday. By yesterday, I had a brush with greatness. Last evening, I wandered down to the local Rippy Mart to, I got a tweet here from Sandra. Don't forget hospice survivors. Lots of money to be made. Let's check the link. Medicare rules create a booming business in hospice care for people who aren't dying. This via the Washington Post. Peter Horisky and Dan Keating, reporting back in December 2013, hospice patients are expected to die. The treatment focuses on providing comfort to the terminally ill, not finding a cure to enroll a patient. Two doctors certify a life expectancy of 6 months or less. But over the past decade, the number of hospice survivors in the United States has risen dramatically, in part because hospice companies earn more by recruiting patients who aren't actually dying. Healthier patients are more profitable because they require fewer visits and stay enrolled longer. Holy mackerel. Because money. Do you ever sit around and just wonder what it would be like to live in a country whose operating philosophy, whose operating system, to use terminology currently in vogue, whose operating system was not reliant upon profiting off the sickness, agony, misery, illness, and ultimately death of its own citizens? What would that be like? Yeah. Thank you, Sandra. So that was Wednesday. Obviously, following Wednesday comes Thursday. And as I said, I had wandered down to the local Rippy Mart just because after a while walking around in the yard with no program to do and screaming at clouds, it gets a little annoying to the neighbors and a little bit worrisome to the family. So I wandered a couple of miles down the road just to, you know, pick up a bottle of V8 juice and shoot the bull or whatever. That's what we do in small town America. And so I was standing there when I had a celebrity brush with greatness. I will not be surprised if none of you, if when I ask the question, every one of the Horn Family Commune congregation says, nope, never seen it. In fact, I'll be inspired if you say you've never seen it. But in the ongoing exploitation of Appalachia, you know, first it was that god-awful series with Kevin Costner on the Hatfields and McCoys. And then it was a reality show about the Hatfields and McCoys coming together to make moonshine. And apparently the production company ran a real rat on the Hatfields and McCoys. Screwed them both. Well, then comes the History Channel, which really should change its name, and a program that apparently is watched by some people. All of these things are desperate attempts to find the next swamp people or the next duck dynasty. Oh, my God, more on that later. And in this instance, they came up with an idea called Appalachian Outlaws. Now, you hear a name like Appalachian Outlaws, you think it's meth tweakers in the streets shooting it out with the federales or something. But no, Appalachian Outlaws is a reality television program about ginseng hunting. And the single largest reality about that reality program is that ginseng is, in fact, very lucrative. And that Central Appalachia is just awesome ginseng country. Climate, including rainfall, temperatures, sunlight, forest canopy. Climate just happens to be perfect in Central Appalachia for the wild growing and propagation of ginseng. Asian areas that are favorable to ginseng propagation have been over-harvested almost to the point of extinction. So once again, Appalachia has something that foreigners want. And as between ginseng and mountaintop removal, I'll take ginseng every day. The trouble with ginseng is that it's harvesting in order to keep it from being over-harvested. Its harvesting is limited by law to basically the end of summer, like right about now, to the first frost. And so there are people who work hard at ginseng digging because, if I've got this right, a ton of ginseng goes for in excess of $1 million. A ton of coal goes for 42. You can see which would be the greater economic engine. But routinely, coal companies, now bear in mind, let's say the revenuer, otherwise known as the Department of Natural Resources Enforcement Officer, let's say he catches you digging ginseng on the Monday after Easter Sunday in the spring. He will arrest your sorry ass. He may even take you to jail. You will be convicted. You might try or plead out one way or the other, but you'll be convicted, and you will pay a hefty fine and court costs, and your ass may go to jail for a while. They're serious about that kind of stuff. If you are a person out there digging ginseng out of season. On the other hand, if you blow up $1 million worth of ginseng and you're a coal company in West Virginia, you barely even pay any taxes on the coal you get, let alone pay for the $1 million worth of ginseng you've destroyed. I don't know what ginseng does for you. I really don't. I don't know that I've ever even much tried it. Hell, my luck, it'd probably make your hair grow back. That's probably why I can't have it. Oh, well. So, what do you know? There's a reality television show about ginseng hunting, and it's called Appalachian Outlaws. And this program features an individual who is referred to as the ginseng guru, who happens to live in this community. That was my brush with fame last night. I was standing there finishing up my purchase, and this guy walks in. And apparently his TV box goes dials as far up as Fox and maybe a few religion channels. And begins explaining how we have to do something about ISIS. Well, okay. I should know better. But, you know, it's just shooting the breeze down to the Rippy Mart. And I said, what is it you want to do? You see, We already tried sending a great big army in and tearing the place up real good, and we did it for several years, starting about 11 years ago, and, well, we're still getting over that. How'd that work out for you? I'm guessing you didn't go over and get in the mix of things. Well, no. But they're cutting people's heads off. I said, oh, stop it. And I mean this sincerely when I say this. We are responding to the beheadings in Syria and Iraq and Iraq by ISIS with um, 21st century modern sensibilities. That's not to say that what's being done isn't awful. But you know what? It was awful when it was done 2,000 years ago and 4,000 years ago. And even more recently than that. When Henry VIII and Elizabeth I and all those civilized English monarchs had people put to death, do you suppose they took the severed heads and gave them a good Christian burial? Oh, hell no! They put them up on the Tower Bridge to remind people not to become insurrectional or treasonous. You know, Cortez's notes, or perhaps not Cortez's, but one of the priests traveling with him, they note in horror the human sacrifices that they beheld when they invaded the Americas and the Valley of Mexico. And yet the very Spain from which they had come was in the midst of a literal conflagration of human bodies in the torture and burnings of people suspected of being witches. And it was done, just as the human sacrifices were in the Valley of Mexico, in the names of their God. During the terror that began in, 1793 in France, Dr. Guillotin, I don't know, my French sucks, devised his little head-lopping device as a humane form of execution, as opposed to letting some guy who didn't properly whet his axe hack away for a little while. Yeah? Hint, them weren't Muslims. Them were Christians. Of one form or another. Elizabeth was a most pious and Christian queen of the realm. How do you suppose the modern for-profit media would report the crucifixion of 5,000 people all down the Appian Way by Marcus Licinius Crassus? Barbarity? Okay. Well, then again, depending on... Marcus Licinius Crassus was the richest man in the known world, so, say, Fox News would probably not report it at all. You know what I mean? You get the idea. How would the modern world react to, say... Oh, God, was it Persepolis or Susa in Persia that Alexander the Great and his men, having gone on a big old bender, decided to burn to the ground? How do you reckon CNN and Wolf Blitzer? Well, we've got to move along now. Would report on the entrance of the Christian crusaders into Jerusalem, at which point they murdered every man, woman, and child of both Muslim and Jewish persuasion. My point being that the barbarity that we're witnessing and our responses to it are not so much a product of... I mean, hell, what about Salome and bring me... Was it Salome and bring me the head of John the Baptist? And they did? What about the Christian genocide of the Albigensian heresy? What about the purges and counter-purges of Protestants and Catholics in France and elsewhere? What about the murders ordered by John Calvin? the problem here is that we are responding with 21st century sensibilities to common human practices. And to a certain extent, it's a function of privilege. Because we, with our short, tiny little historical perspectives, look back and we say, oh, look, we got over all this. Well, okay, we thought we got over it in the First World War, but obviously didn't. But then we had a second one. And we sure got over it then. I mean, you know, never again and all that, right? Here's a quick question. How were the heroes of the original White Rose Society in Germany during the Second World War, how were they executed? Specifically, how did Sophie Scholl die? She was, I believe, beheaded. Oh, well, but those were Nazis. And again, I'm not excusing the conduct of ISIS. I'm talking about the way we respond to them and the visceral responses that ISIS wants and knows they can get. Because they know that we are not much in the way of deep thinking over here. Hell, 19 Saudis flew planes into the World Trade Center, and we bombed Iraq. That's like saying when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, George Bush would have invaded Mexico. So we're not really, we really, really, really are not very good at perspective. Yes, they are beheading people in Iraq and Syria, but they're not doing it because they don't have bullets or ropes. They're doing it for the propaganda shock value of it. Can we please have enough perspicacity about us not to do what they expect us to do? So back to the badinage at the Rippy Mart. I looked at the guy and said, "You're kidding, right?" And then explained, you know, what about? Yeah, but they're the Antichrist. And something inside me went, "Oh no." And if we don't get them over there, they're going to come over here. And I just looked at him and said, how? They don't have a single troop ship. They don't have a single airplane. They couldn't get a plane in the air. Yeah, but they flew there. No, they didn't. Saudi Arabians did. Al-Qaeda did. And even Al-Qaeda has dismissed, has distanced itself and condemned this gang, ISIS. Yeah, but if we don't fight them there, we're going to have to fight them here. George Bush said that 11 years ago, and how did that work out for you? See what happens when I'm not behind the microphone? I start doing the program al fresco just wherever I happen to be. But it got worse. Because then, the ginseng guru, no, really, began talking about the Lord Jesus Christ. And he said, well, I know Jesus is my Lord and Savior. Isn't he yours? What is it with these people? Why do they feel privileged to just go religion at you? So, having been screwed with, I answered back, of course not. You really believe that baloney? Because I can sit here and deconstruct it for you and explain to you exactly why it is baloney. Well, no, I know Jesus Christ my Lord and Savior. Good for you. If you were born in Saudi Arabia, you would know that you were going to heaven because you believed in Allah. If you were born in India, you would know that you would not be reincarnated as a member of the Bush family because you had done correct obeisance to Ganesh. What? Really? My brush with greatness. And neither bottle of tequila nor swirly straw anywhere to be found. And it was funny. So the guy left, and I just stood there jawing a little while longer. 10 minutes later, he comes back in. He's intrigued by the heathen. And I was just being of goodwill and had a little smile on my face. And he said, you know, I got, and he named the name of his church. And he said, and we paid to send our youth pastor over to Ethiopia or somewhere and five other people. And they went for a drive out into the country and they had them 3 sacks of bread. I thought, really? Really? This is where we're going? And they was afraid they wasn't going to have enough bread to feed everybody. I said, yeah, tell me more. Well, they started passing it out. I said, and let me guess. They passed out bread to everybody who wanted some, and they still had bread left over. He said, brother, how did you know? They never even got to the bottom of the first sack. I said, I guess I'm just magic that way. You know, the parable of loaves and the story of the loaves and fishes. But apparently these fundies are so damn tight they'll only go with the loaves and leave the fishes go hang. I mean, we wouldn't want God to be, you know, wouldn't, I mean, that's pushing it, right? So then we sparred a little bit more. I said, you ever notice how Jesus is all the time curing cancer and making tumors go away and making bones knit, but he's never grown anything back, not even so much as the last knuckle of a little finger. I mean, this is just easy stuff. And he says, well, as a matter of fact, I do. And starts telling me about this guy. And you know, he was born with a birth defect. It's like he had a little old baby's hand at the end of his arm. And God made his whole hand grow back. And you know, the other night I got woke up in the middle of the night by the Holy Spirit. Holy Spirit told me in the middle of the night, the end is coming soon. Jesus is a coming back. I'm a coming back, says the Holy Spirit. What can you say to that? Do tell. Good for you. And I finally just looked at him and said, listen, whatever you want to believe is fine by me. I live in a natural world where when apples fall off trees, they follow the law of gravity and fall to earth and don't float into the air. You live in a world where they might float into the air at any minute, you know, because miracles. That's fine for you. Good for you. I reckon you've never seen that happen, but you believe it can, if that's what Jesus wants. And that's fine. But don't be walking around telling people who don't believe this baloney. This baloney. It's rude. It's uncivilized. And unpleasant. I have studied all of this stuff that you believe, and I find it to be poppycock. Yeah, but Jesus Christ is the only Lord and Savior. I said, well, yeah, to you. No, for everybody. I said, listen, Buster, there are enough people in the Christian heaven that I don't want anything to do with that I'll be happy to not have their company. No. Michael, always looking for an angle. Michael and Madison, Bob's reality. Please, Bob, tell me this guy had his camera crew hovering around. Nope. He wasn't even on the clock. But see, this is where we make up for prayer meeting Wednesday, I guess. They make up for whatever doctrinal shortcomings they have, and they are legion, with fervor and zeal. And you give this guy the latitude of either not being watched or some kind of government sanction, and he, by God, would be a lopping off heads left and right. Which brings us to another reality program. You know that the Duck Doofuses, are back in the news. Phil Robertson, who, we must recall, has declared that persons of color were much more happy under slavery than they are now, has opined that it is time for the United States to go and either kill ISIS or convert them to Christianity. It's their choice. Oh, really? In other words, as a Christian, he wants to do the same thing that ISIS is doing, only in reverse. If only we could figure out some way to build some sort of giant thunderdome and put all the fundies of Muslim and Christian stripe in them and just give them a bunch of ball bats and swords and knives and stuff and let them go at it. Many walk in, none walk out. Nobody gets to win. This might be a much nicer world. And the winner will be taken on by corporate CEOs in round two. Let's just clean the joint up altogether. That's what happens in my world when we're not carrying on this conversation. Note coming in from Bruce. Hey, Bob, glad you're back behind the microphone. I just want to alert you to the following story. Oh, dear, I think I know what this is. Yep. Saudi Arabia beheads four men for having large amount of banned amphetamine pills. Sure, why not? Three Syrians and an Iranian convicted of drug trafficking were executed by the sword in Saudi Arabia on Tuesday. Syrians Hamoud Hassoun Hassan Musalamani and Yusuf Al-Halki were all arrested with a large amount of banned amphetamine pills, said three separate statements on the yada, yada, yada. Because they're so civilized, those Saudis. But see, this is where foreign policy gets complicated. Because there are no good guys over there. We prop up the Saudis because the Saudis are at least economically useful to us. Whoever would replace the Saudis would probably be hostile to us and economically detrimental. They would not be democratic. There's no... I don't care how many of these groups set themselves up as pro-democracy. They ain't. There are no good answers. And I mentioned earlier I mentioned earlier that it's not just the usual cast of numbskulls, to wit, the bomber John McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham cracker, who are hollering for some sort of war with somebody else's kids in Syria. Oh, hell no. No, no. There are Democrats who are facing re-election bids who are getting into the act. And it's kind of sad and sorry, the one who is, or who has. I mean, for instance, let's see, who is it? Mark Warner, is it Mark Warner in Virginia? He's just a Clinton wannabe. I expected of him. But no, Al Franken wrote a letter to Attorney General Eric Holder. You know, trying to be tough. Mark Warner has called for, you know, a comprehensive strategy on ISIS. As if one just goes down to the corner grocery and picks one of those up. You know, I'm no hawk, and I'm no big fan of the military-industrial congressional complex. But I got to give at least a little bit of props to the Pentagon for not saying, you know what? Let's just go. Let's go have us some more war in the Middle East, because they always work out so well. They are apparently trying to figure out what to do about ISIS. And they have to come up with something. Because, by God, they's a cutting people's heads off over there, and it's the Antichrist. You know, because if one reality TV star in West Virginia says it, you know it's got to be being said by other people. The goofiest part of it is that some of this crap is being said by Al Franken. Attorney General Holder, not even dear. The Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant poses a grave threat to American security interests. I am particularly concerned about the threat posed by Americans, including Minnesotans, who have traveled to Syria to fight with ISIL. I appreciate the information that the Justice Department has shared with my staff and me on this subject thus far, and I request that the administration devote all necessary and appropriate resources to address this threat. Sorry, that sounded kind of Kerry-esque, didn't it? I was troubled by the president's recent suggestion that the administration has not yet developed a comprehensive strategy to address the growing threat of ISIL's activities in Syria. Really? Why? This has not been going on that long. Strategies take time to develop. They have to be thought out, and the brain trusts in the Pentagon have to figure out what it would take to do ABC or XYZ. They don't just have a comprehensive manual for how to put down beheaders in a desert. As you know, one aspect of the threat that ISIL's efforts to recruit American and other Western citizens to join its forces, one aspect of that threat. One American who went to high school in Minnesota has been confirmed to have been killed in Syria while fighting with ISIL, and others have traveled there to fight with ISIL as well. I don't know. What does that mean, fight with ISIL? Does that mean Americans are traveling over there to oppose them or to join them in their fight? Not clear. Apparently not a lot of copy editing going on in Senator Franken's office. We must act diligently and responsibly to prevent Americans from taking up arms with ISIL. Still don't know what that means. Or from re-entering our country if they do. Really? Unilateral de-citizenshipization? That should be interesting. This requires that the Justice Department use all relevant legal authorities and all appropriate resources at its disposal to respond when Americans travel to Syria to engage in terrorist activities and to prevent that from happening in the first place. Huh! Pre-crime! The Justice Department should focus its resources and efforts in places where terrorism recruitment effort... Blah, 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 blah. ISIL's acts of terror deeply offend the principles espoused by religions the world over. No! No, goddammit! They are in line with principles espoused by religions the world over. Come on, Al! I don't think you're a Presbyterian. You might have some little inkling of what religions have done to certain minorities the world over in the name of their deity of choice. Christians have done it. Muslims have done it. Lots of others have done it, too. Oh, Bishop Willard, would you care to give the lecture on the Mountain Meadows Massacre? Then this, Minnesotans of all backgrounds and faiths are committed to seeing this evil eradicated and justice being done. Eradicated? That's like kill them all, isn't it? Let Allah or God or Jehovah or Yahweh or Huitzilopochtli or Ganesh or Shiva or Vishnu or the Buddha, just sort them out. Sometimes Mama's advice was the best advice. Mind your own business. God, this is pathetic. Sure. Lindsey Graham Cracker and Bomber John McCain want to blow up the world. That's not news. You know, that's dog bites man. Al Franken's kind of man bites dog. That is news. Because when he says he wants ISIL eradicated, that means that somebody's got to do the eradicating. And that means somebody's 18-year-old that isn't Al Franken's. A lot of somebody's 18-year-olds that aren't Al Franken's. Because, you know, war is always a good answer. It's a great answer. It's the question that sucks. Yeah. Meanwhile, Mark Warner has said, I urge the administration to come to Congress with a clear strategy and political and military options for eliminating the ISIL threat. Well, then, wouldn't you want the administration to be developing the strategy? I mean, it's not in the red box video rental gazigi outside of CVS, okay? You don't just go get yourself an ISIL strategy. It takes a little work. I urge the administration to come to Congress with a clear strategy and political and military options for eliminating the ISIL threat. The United States should not take any military options off the table. Any? Really? Not even nukes? Nope. We need to make sure they understand we'll nuke them. Because stopping ISIL is in the national security and foreign policy interests of the U.S. and our European allies. Gentlemen, we have got to protect our phony baloney jobs. Harumph, harumph. I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Harumph. Watch your ass. Meanwhile, NATO has agreed to create a rapid readiness deployment team that can be anywhere in the world in a matter of minutes. Anywhere in the world in a matter of minutes generally means countries bordering Russia. Are you inspired? I'm not inspired. And it goes on and on and on that way. So, yeah, thanks, Bruce, for reminding me of that civilized moment in Saudi Arabia. Wonder why amphetamines would be popular in Saudi Arabia anyway. I mean, this is, after all, a country that exists on the backs of people working in slave labor conditions who come there from other countries, become trapped there, and cannot leave, and who then have to work and work and work and work, or just die. Wonder why amphetamines would be popular in Saudi Arabia. Little linguistic clarity coming from Michael and Madison. Fight with ISIL. Michael says, alongside. I believe the word Senator Franken may be looking for is alongside. On a similar head-meat-wall note, you catch Vice President Joe Biden doing the Gates of Hell screaming shtick a few days ago? God help us all. I guess it's time for round three in Iraq. Signed, Michael. Remember, Michael, we're not taking anything off the table because John Warner, by God, he's a Virginian. Jack in Shreveport noting, there's about 100 Americans that have gone to fight with ISIL, I hear. If we go ahead and look at that with respect to our whole population, about 300 million. And why the heck not? That gives us about 0.00003% of our population that's fighting with ISIL. It would be hard not to think that percent of our population would be doing something like that. Yeah, it's a statistical blip. But like the ginseng guru told me last night, well, they could be coming in from Mexico, and we'd never even know it. Yeah, because you know what? If you speak Spanish or Quechua or Quiche, you know, it all sounds like Arabic. Yeah. Jesus. Philip, who was another one who helped keep things going during the recent shut down with an email. Philip says, I purchased some Antichrist in anticipation of my soul overheating during this era of global climate change. I did not want my lack of religiosity to overheat this summer. I probably could have used some of that. Sadly, I bought the wrong brand and still get somewhat overheated when I hear the reaction horror at ISIS atrocities. Granted, they're despicably atrocious, but what about the public beheadings our staunch allies, the Saudis, perform in accordance with their understanding of Sharia? More on Sharia in a moment. Where's the public outrage against U.S. subsidies of those who made a pact in hell with the Wahhabists? I guess being from Massachusetts, I guess I need a dance card to keep track of which religious extremists we're supposed to consider our friends across the water. Being from Massachusetts, I have to admit bias. Philip says, I suspect that John Proctor would rather have endured the pain of beheading than the torment of the press upon his chest. Lest I drone on, so to speak, and reap more casualties, I'll end this here. More weight, Philip. More weight. Note coming from Kate. Bob, my imagination was running wild this past week, assuming that this was the time that we dropped off the edge. Didn't hear exactly what went south, but glad you're back. You didn't mention, by the way, how the boy's breathing after his visit to the clinic. He got a prescription for Flonase that he can take once a day, and it gives him some relief for about an hour and a half, and then he's all pumped up again. Kate says, when I come across crap like the cartoon on the wall in the examining room you talked about, I quietly take it down. I'd apologize later if confronted. There's an elder here where I live who's been on hospice care for over 2 years. I shudder at the waste of Medicare money that goes on in my little corner of the world. Kate closes saying, if I can log on to PayPal, you have $40 coming at you to become 80, thanks to Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. And she was able to log on, and that is true. Speaking of which, a note coming in from Steve. Here's a $75 challenge for this evening. Thank you, Steve. So that means that between Steve and Kate, we are, $35 for meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, and Steve is challenging someone to meet his $75 and thereby double it. See, that's the way these challenges work. Thanks. Philip also pointing out, for years, Al Franken sent me emails telling me how much he supported Bill Clinton's notion of being a Democrat and requested funds. Now I've been telling my friends since 1994 that Bill Clinton is the most moderate Republican president in my lifetime. However, that acknowledgement did not compel me to support Al. What I find so confusing is our unwillingness to denounce the Egyptian junta as architects of a coup that showed Egyptians how democracy really works when one votes for a Mohamed Morsi or Salvador Allende when contrasted with our most craven Democrats' desire to destroy the Egyptian goddess who represented the ideal mother and wife as well as the patroness of nature and magic. She was also a friend of slaves, sinners, artisans, and the downtrodden, meaning ISIS. Obviously, the answer is to bomb ISIS into oblivion so that more generations of young Muslims with no legal outlet for political protest or participation can become radicalized and detest a West that already considers them barbarians beyond the pale. La plus ça change. Be well. And that to the whole Horn Family Commune congregation, signed Philip. Kate with a follow-up. Subject line, so what? We're all going to die. Why don't our government and Christian fundies mind our own business? This is all so embarrassing to me. Why don't we fire up the bombers when women and kids get abused and dead? The guys who got their heads lopped off knew they were in a dangerous zone. I think the legal term for that, Kate, is assumption of the risk. And how do we know for sure that the videos were not photoshopped? We kind of don't. By the way, and see, Philip and Kate didn't know it, but they were tapped into the very same wavelength. Kate says, by the way, please stop calling them by the sacred name of ISIS. ISIL or something else. It offends me to hear the goddess's name being used. At least Franken is using the right name. This all makes my heart hurt. Guess I'll shut off all the media again. Back to reading good books here. On the good news front, yay, Nova Scotia and three other provinces have banned fracking. That is good news. That's magnificent news. Oh, Nancy jumping in with a kind contribution. Keep up the great work, Nancy says. Heard you on Mike Malloy and was impressed. Well, thank you, Nancy. Nobody can touch Mike, though. I mean, Mike was the one who impressed me into thinking we could do this. And between Nancy and Beth, thank you, Beth, Steve's challenge has been met. So, yay, look at that. We have taken care of fundraising for the evening. And thanks very much indeed for helping to so do, all and one and all and every. Thank you indeed. Let's see, about 18 minutes past the hour. I've been kind of all over the boards, but there's all kinds of stuff out there. One more. And I hate to see this. Our buddy Patrick in Germany sent this along. It is from Deutsche Welle, in English, no less. A story coming out of the city of 350,000, not too awfully far from Dusseldorf. The name of this city is Wuppertal. Wuppertal? Not sure what to do with that O. Didn't see an umlaut. But this is, you know how I feel about the idiots in places like Oklahomistan who pass laws saying, no judge can consider no international laws and especially not that Sharia law. You know, the Sharia law that President Obama follows. Dumb. Dumber still, though, what is happening in Wuppertal, Germany? Because there are groups of shaggy bearded males who have donned orange vests with silver reflective stripes on them and begun wandering the area around the train station in Wuppertal. And, you know, train stations always have things like tobacco shops and bars, and it's Germany and beer and... Right. I mean, not too awfully far from there is brewed some of the... Well, in Dusseldorf is brewed Alt. And, of course, not too awfully far away in Cologne is brewed my favorite beer in the entire flipping world, Kölsch. But the shaggy, bearded, fundamentalist Phil Robertson wannabes, I guess, have taken to wandering the Hofbahnhaus. That's German for train station, isn't it? Either that or Bilgewater or mother-in-law, I can't remember. They wander around in these vests with these reflective stripes on it, and written on the backs of the vests are the words Sharia Police. I've even double-checked this to make sure it's real. It's real, or appears to be. This is proving upsetting to normal, decent German human beings. It turns out that these Sharia police have declared the Bar District, which is described as a sleazy nightlife area. By God, sleazy is in the eye of the beholder. Other people call it the fun area. But they have declared it a Sharia-controlled zone. The story reports that they are Salafist Muslims and reports that Salafism, is a puritanical form of Islam. Are walking around in orange traffic safety vests with the words Sharia Police written in English on the back. And that's kind of what threw me at first, because wouldn't it be Sharia Polizei? The report goes on, they've been observed distributing leaflets urging people to refrain from alcohol, drugs, gambling, attending concerts, watching pornography, or visiting prostitutes. Police have stopped 11 men between the ages of 19 and 33 in Wuppertal Wednesday night. They're being investigated to see whether charges of illegal assembly could be brought against them. And the decent German citizens are bothered by this. They've been going to their local constabulary, who, oddly enough, do not simply beat them for being concerned about their community. Maybe America could learn a little something. It's now gotten serious enough that the police today announced they've set up a hotline to allow local citizens to report concerns or possible criminal activity on the behalf of these Duck Dynasty-looking fundamentalists. Wuppertal Police Chief Birgitte Radenacher said today, intimidation or provocation won't be tolerated. Only police appointed and employed by the state have the legitimate right to act as police in Germany. The mayor of Wuppertal, Peter Jung, said he supports taking a hard line against the group's activities. These people's intention is to provoke and intimidate and force their ideology upon others. going on, Mayor Jung said, Wuppertal is an open and tolerant city which is proud of the fact that people of different religions and convictions live together in peace. And they do, until the fundies show up. The article closes noting, German authorities fear that Salafists have been encouraging young men to travel to Syria or Iraq to join the militant Islamic State or similar groups. What do you do? What do you do with that? Now, I'm all nonviolent, peaceful. I don't care much for war. But if one of these dumb bastards was to walk up to me in a train station, it would be everything in my power, would take everything in my power for me not to look at him and say, get away from me with your goddamn filthy religious bullshit and your imaginary God. Now, that would not be prudent or wise. The smart thing to do with one of these is to holler, Hilfe, Polizei, and see if you could get a local cop over and say, these men have assaulted me. Please arrest them. Now, granted, Germany does not share the same common law heritage that we do with ancient Mariolde Engelon, so I don't know what constitutes the crime of assault in Germany. But I got to think that there's something, got to be something, in the German legal codes about people putting you, approaching you and putting you in fear. Don't you figure? Maybe Patrick can help us out with that, or any of our other members of the Horn Family Commune congregation in Germany. But I see, it's a tough call. I mean, it really, really is. At the end of the day, while the right wing have the market cornered on big overgrown amygdalae, you know, lizard brains, we've all of us got one. And it is tappable in each and every one of us. And I don't know how to, I have a hard time dealing with mine. Because there's a part of you, or there's a part of me that just kind of goes, shoot him! I mean, just because I disagree with Bomber John and Senator Graham Cracker doesn't mean I don't understand the fundamental human impulse to say, let's take all of our big fancy aircraft and slaughter all of these fundamentalist assholes in Syria and Iraq. I don't think that's the right course, but I would be something superhuman if I suggested that those feelings don't exist. Or maybe let's give the ISIL people, I've taken Philip and Kate to heart, they will no longer be that other word. Let's capture a few of them and put a video out of, nah, let's not behead them. Let's get some of those CIA boys we trained up real good and video them, you know, really doing a number. Yeah, right? Yeah, that'd feel real good. I mean, that'd probably make our amygdala lizard brains just tingle with joy. The problem with your amygdala, though, is that that's the not human part of the brain. That's why the shorthand for it is the lizard brain. That's the things that lizard people do. how does a civilized nation, we could probably do an entire program debate on that one, but how do civilized people respond to this? Bomb them some more. No, no. Gas them? No. Nuke them? Damn it. And I'm sure out there somewhere there's some 962nd tier right-winger saying, yeah, see them liberals, they want to have a psychological sensitivity session with them. Hell, maybe we could send out some of those Amish terrorists to shave their beards. You remember that story? So here we are. Again, thanks, Patrick, for sharing that with us. But understand, these guys walking around in Wuppertal are not much different from the jackasses who wander around the United States talking about how we got to go kill some Muslims. They killed us. Let's kill them before they come over here in their, with their great big Navy and their great big Air Force that they don't have. You know, it would have been fun to look at the ginseng guru and say, wait a minute, buddy. Your hero, God, was crucified. He was murdered by the state. He was executed. Rome did to him what you want to do to these people. Oh, what the... What was that about turning the other cheek? What was that about loving your enemies being the highest form of love? Oopsie. Not alongside, but against. Pull up that. You remember during the Spanish Civil War, there was an expatriate brigade. There was an expatriate brigade called the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, and a lot of Americans went and fought in it. Well, the fundies that want to go fight ISIL, why don't they put together the, Jerry Falwell Brigade and go fight? And then, of course, Michael kind of nails it on the dismount. Civilized? A nation that cannot even successfully do lethal injection and routinely executes innocent prisoners? Civilized, you say? Which nation now? I know. It is, that word is certainly subject to rather broad interpretation, isn't it? Sorry about the little internet burp there. I guess you're going to have that from time to time. Had less of it tonight than we have lately, though. Yay. And thanks to Philip for kicking in this evening. Philip says, much as I enjoy Agnes's mastery of the violin and classical performances, I prefer the show. Hope this helps for tomorrow. Oh, it's a big help. It is a huge help. We got through no one's fault, we got ourselves in a heck of a hole. But we pretty nearly climbed out of it. And thanks also to Michael for kicking in as well. I was reading Michael's Facebook page the other day and found out that for the first time in his entire life, he'd had a run-in with Yellow Jackets and not the Georgia Tech variety. It seems like it so often happens when you're mowing grass, and really it will turn you into a Yellow Jacket attack will turn you into a subhuman, you know, like Australopithecus afarensis, like that. So it is Friday on the front porch. And one and all are welcome to join in. Should be having some Jim Dandy conversation, especially in light of how gone I've been for the last week. Sparky is taking a rare night off from managing the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. It's being run by Devin this evening. If you want to participate, in tonight's Horn Malloy Skype chat group during Friday on the Front Porch, you need to send a contact request to Devin, D-E-V-E-N, dot Matlick, M-A-T-L-I-C-K, Devin, D-E-V-E-N, dot Matlick. M-A-T-L-I-C-K. I don't know if the dot's in there or not. Just search Devin Matlick and you'll find him on Skype and jump right in. Danged if I ain't filibobstered more than half of the program away. So, yeah, a little break, and then we'll fire up the group, jump right into the conversation. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, it is a darn good time. And sorry, just this will only take a minute. I've got just the bumper. I really do. Let me check. Let me see something. Nope. Just a minute. This is getting frustrating. Nope. Where'd it go? Oh well. We'll go to a default bumper then. This is listener supported conversation radio. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Everybody's restless, and they got no place to go. Someone's always trying to tell them something they already know. So their anger and resentment flow, but don't it make you want to rock and roll all night long? Mohammed's radio. Got his problems too. He will surely take them out on you. In walks the village idiot, and his face is all aglow. He's been up all night listening to Mohammed's radio. Desperate, trying to make ends meet. Work all day, still can't pay the price of gasoline. And me, alas, their lives are incomplete. Don't it make you want to talk and roll all night long? Mohammed's radio. Been up all night listening for his trumpet. Hoping that the righteous might just come.
Just came down.
I heard the general whispering to his aide-de-camp. Be watchful.
I told it was. I told you it was appropriate. I was actually going for, but could not find, a different Warren Zevon song. I was going to go with Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner, which is one of my favorites, but oh well, things don't always work out. This is The Horn. This is Friday on the Front Porch. I'm Bob Kincaid, back after an unwanted vacation. But we are live, and we have the Friday on the Front Porch gang together, and it is a... right dandy good group it looks like we've got going this evening. As I said, Sparky is taking a, Sparky's actually with us, but he's taking a much needed evening sorta off, and the group is being run. This is the Friday on the Front Porch group, Burpee Hybrid Edition, being run by Devin. Good evening, everybody. Hi, Devin.
Hey. Yeah, sorry it took so long to get it going there. My satellite modem decided to reboot.
Oh, isn't that fun? but you're okay. So in the room this evening. Good evening, Sal.
Hello, Bob.
And good evening, John. I'm assuming that's John. Hey, Sergi.
Hey, Bob.
Good evening, Will. I don't know if Will's going going voice with us or not, or just sitting and listening.
I'm here in voice. Welcome back, and remember, as you said earlier, the Wisconsin Challenge is still on the table for doubling the money to support the Horn.
Actually, we between Steve's challenge and it's been met, by golly. But thank you, Will. So happy.
Well, hey, if anyone listening wants to chip in for next week and get a start, why not?
Well, kind of filling in the hole from during the week as it is. We're not even getting started on next week. It's brutal. It really is. Everybody's willing to chip in, and we've had really good help too, and it has meant a lot. Good evening, Larry.
Howdy, Bob. Howdy, everyone.
Todd and Kath are with us out in the wilds of Ohio somewhere.
Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody.
Hey, Kath.
Hi, Bob. And Devin, thanks so much for hosting this evening.
And so...
you're welcome.
And Sparky, are you actually with us?
Can you hear me?
I hear you great.
Yes.
Okay.
It's got
I'm 130 miles from my home on a slow bandwidth.
So far,
now
so
that's
good.
Some Wi-Fi.
And so I'm sitting in the front yard at my father-in-law's old house under the cottonwood trees with a laptop on my knees in a comfortable chair after that three-hour drive up here.
Nice. So you haven't gone hiking in the the forest fire area yet?
No. When the woman event happens tomorrow, we're going to be in the four-wheel drive pickup, and we'll be exploring the remains of the day fire that almost burned up the town where my stepson lives.
That'll be interesting. There will be photographs, right?
Yes, there will be.
Cool. Look forward to seeing them. So
more interesting.
Are you going through lightsaber? Are you going through lightsaber withdrawal, Sparky?
No.
Yeah, not exactly a power crazed maniac,
no.
Sparky.
No, this is really cool sitting here. The female party is going to go on in a renovated old house that's the guest house of the town now. Anybody can use or rent pretty much for free. It was built, redone through a trust of the old people that lived there. So that's where they're having their woman party tomorrow. Just across the street.
So where is this? Are you care to say?
Up in Modoc County, Larry.
Oh, wow. And all tourists? Oh.
Well, it's 54 miles to Alturas from here.
Oh, okay.
I'm right at the border edge. Shasta County's
okay.
On the other side. Shasta County's on the other side of the mountain I'm looking at right now by the old, this thing behind the Lookout Ranch. And then Lassen County's just to the south of us.
I got you. Okay, thank you.
Just below Tule Lake, where the internment camp was at Stemma. One of the internment camps. I'm done.
So there's going to be some estrogen overload up that way, huh?
Yes.
Well, I'll just
go ahead and say it. It's a baby shower.
Yeah. You're not. It's just.
Aww.
You're not necessarily supposed to be there.
No, that's why I'm going to be out in the woods tomorrow with my stepson.
Yeah.
Really? I don't understand this. How is it that you're not supposed to be there?
Well, it may sound a little bit sexist, Larry, but and maybe I'll get hate mail, but it's one of those things where... there's still a pretty, at least in this culture, still a pretty bright demarcation of gender.
Oh. And would you want to shower with Duncan? Just a thought.
No. Bob knows where I'm going with this. It's about breaking down the boundaries of gender and segregation and separation and what roles and all that stuff, you know.
You can only do that. Yeah, but I mean, you can only do that so much. There'll always be demarcations between men and women and other genders, Larry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of the problem, that we socialize men differently from socializing women. Yeah.
I mean, you know, to use one example, I mean, to this day, I have not met a single woman who, you know, like, for example, me and Kazumaki, you know, he's been in this, he hasn't been on the front porch, but he's been in the late night group on occasion. You know, he's one of my friends, you know, who's also in this whole Tempest thing. And, you know, I have not met, and I doubt I will ever meet, a woman who is going to be willing to join in on our burping contests. You know, there's always going to be a demarcation there, Larry.
What? Yeah, I mean, it's not.
Burping contests? I could win that.
See?
But I'm not talking about burping. I'm talking about...
You're more than welcome to to compete.
I had a brother who was 2 years older than me. He used to always compete.
I'm just seeing flashback Revenge of the Nerds myself.
Just saying.
So, Kath, are you a member of the Blue Flame Club?
No. The what? No, just burping.
Can we avoid things that violate the Geneva Conventions against gas warfare?
Well, I can say I'm proudly a member of the Blue Flame Club. Well, not just Blue Flame, red too. Red and orange and blue.
That's too funny.
It's excellent for hair removal, I suppose.
It's excellent for tearing out a whole house, especially if you do it a couple hours after eating that Taco Bell.
Oh, dear God. TMI, TMI.
Aren't you glad you came back on a Friday, Bob?
Subject change.
Okay,
Bob.
Man, I tell you, Bob, Friday on the front porch, we're like 20 minutes in and already just right down to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah. It's just...
I'm sorry, what was that sound effect you gave?
Toilet talk.
Yeah. Anyway, Bob, I was looking at Indian country today, and there's going to be some kind of convention happening in October in Wisconsin. Res Wisconsin. Do you know anything about what they do there?
Haven't heard anything about it. First I've heard. I'll look into it. Sounds cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Where's the Fighting Bob Fest or Fighting Fest?
Fighting Bob Fest is going to be in Baraboo, Wisconsin on the 13th of September.
That's what I
thought. Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's the Bob LaFall at the Progressive.
Yeah, it's named
Bob
after him.
Bob LaFall at the Progressive. Yeah. Yeah. And the same party that Henry Wallace was part of, right? Yeah. It's...
Well, wasn't La Follette technically
a
Republican progressive?
I think he was, actually. Although, don't quote me on that because I don't know my history over that well.
Back when that was still a thing.
Yeah. Hey, how about
deals at two Bob enters, one Bob leaves?
I was going to ask, Sergi, could you give us a post-debate update, please, from Texas Stan?
Okay, so the latest news is, for some mysterious reason, Greg Abbott decided to bail on the original plan agreed to by both Abbott and Davis. The original plan, this was agreed to back in May, mind you, months ago. They both, you know, had a deal with the Gannett Company, G-A-N-N-E-T-T.
Yeah, Gannett.
Gannett owns, or Gannett, I just pronounced it Gannett, though, I don't know. They own, what is it, like 10 TV stations here in Texas. Their flagship's WFAA here in North Texas. And the plan was for them to, at the WFAA studios, host a debate that was going to be raucous on all the Gannett stations, 83% of the state. Well, the meeting happened on the 2nd after Abbott bailed out, and the whole thing fell apart. And first off, let me mention, people over at WFAA and the whole Gannett company, they are going to have beef with Greg Abbott for a long time. And in fact, you know, I remember, you know, last week when he did it in the first place, they laid into him. Like, normally their newscasts are actually genuinely balanced. They actually make an effort to be balanced, but they laid into Greg Abbott. And I was so pleased to see that. So as I mentioned last week, Abbott then ran over to KERA, our PBS station here in North Texas. Well, Wendy Davis has agreed to KERA, so it's going to happen on KERA on the 30th, the same time as the WFAA one is supposed to happen. It's going to be on KERA Channel 13 here in North Texas. And KERA is offering the debate for free to every TV and radio station in Texas. So what I'm hoping is that, you know, Greg Abbott's whole, what I guess is his game plan, is like, well, let's just have it seen in North Texas. I hope that plenty of stations take KERA up on their word, say they're going to, you know, simulcast the debates, and it's going to be broadcast statewide anyway, and the whole state will still be watching Greg Abbott lose to Wendy Davis.
Lord willing, the creek don't rise.
And the pigs don't eat my baby brother.
Never heard that part, Kath.
No, I used to work in a little restaurant and bar, and one of the waitresses was about 80, and she used to always say that. And the pigs don't eat my baby brother.
Yes, Marky.
I was going to say, you were saying about the creek going dry, it's done the river done. Gone here.
Yeah, that's probably a not particularly sensitive remark for me to make, given the for the California audience.
Drove to this little town called New Beaver that's just like 6-7 miles away from here, and the Pitt River. It's not real big, but they call it a river. Some people might call it a creek, but it's just bone dry. There's just nothing but the riverbed. And then there's a couple little, I could see from the bridge of the town. I turned up and looked upstream on it, and there was a little puddle up there, and some rancher's cows were down in there drinking out of the puddle. Well, it's a big puddle. I mean, but across the field over here, there's a stepson is in this guy that bought this ranch up here from my stepson's friend, a friend. They put in a big old deep well and to run up. I mean, it's a monster gardening wheel type thing.
Yeah.
It waters 100 acres and it turns off a pivot point. And it runs just off this one pump. They put a monster pump in there, and several people around here, their wells went dry, and my stepson had to lower his pump. He was able to lower his pump 10 foot to get water.
And when, I mean, is there a forecast for when that gets any better, Sparky, or does it?
I don't know. I've read stuff that we were supposed to get a good El Nino. Now they say that El Nino is not going to be very good. And then there's all kinds of scary articles that just may go on for years and years and years. All across the American West, while the East Coast just gets deluged.
Yeah. And the Sierras. Go ahead.
At the current moment, Duncan, California's forecast to have slightly wetter than normal winter. So there is just a little glimmer of hope. I hope that it pans out for y'all. That's what the Climate Prediction Center is currently prognosticating.
Well, one thing driving up here today, I got to see the backside of Mount Shasta from a little town that's called Fall River. I mean, there's a valley that runs just straight up for 50, 60 miles or so, to maybe or farther. Runs straight towards Shasta, and just Shasta just sits in the middle of it, looking like when you're on the ground. And I could see the glaciers on the north side of the mountain. There's quite a few still there, but on the south side, when we're driving up today, there's one little teeny tiny glacier left. But I did happen to look over to the Trinity Alps, and I was surprised. Right at the highest part of the Alps, there's still like a little snow, so evidently they got some more snow or whatever. It's just there, and it's amazed me. There's your Northern California lesson.
As far as how much water is being taken out, the Sierras over the past year have popped up an inch because of all the weight coming off from how much groundwater that's been sucked out.
You mean the mountains themselves have become an inch higher?
Yes.
Of course, that's contrary to our experience in Appalachia, because our mountains tend to collapse because their guts have been hollowed out.
Yeah, but they're already moving up on their own, but they've pulled out enough groundwater that it takes the weight off, and they've went up a lot faster. So they gained an inch a year just from groundwater extraction.
Well, if you look at a relief map of the Great Central Valley and the mountains all around the coast range and everything, the rivers and everything flow into the valley, and all the water comes down there, and it's just like, I don't know, it's kind of like a cartoon, I would imagine. We're just sucking the valley down, and the mountains have got to go up.
Hi, I can see you, Dunk.
Oh. I'll take care of that. There.
Okay.
I'm on the laptop. I don't use this very often.
It zigged when you wanted to zag.
The wind's coming up here, too. I gotta mute the mic, and then I can hear dogs barking. It's really quiet here.
Seems to be pretty quiet on what's coming through.
Go
ahead.
Thing about this little town, if somebody hollers, somebody else will hear you. the logging trucks have quit running, so it's there's nothing on the road or anything.
It must be awesome.
Oh, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. It's the worst place in California to be in the winter, though. I've been here when it was 20 below.
That was the porch of the house in the background?
Yeah, the old house you saw, if you saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That my father-in-law had it, and then when he passed away, my stepson kind of took it over, and he paid the taxes on it and everything, but they've got a fifth wheel park next to it. It's kind of broken down. The house is kind of falling apart, and they don't have the money to fix it.
Hey, can I shift gears and go back to a previous question I asked?
Sure.
I really would like some input from anyone who wants to offer it. Vis-a-vis what does anybody have a sense of what a proper response is to ISIL, ISIL, IS, and we're not going to call it ISIS anymore. This business going on in Germany of the Sharia police walking around, bunch of freakish bearded right-wing fundamentalists. I'm really stymied on this. Because, you know, my lizard brain is saying some very, very clear, unmistakable things, and yet the civilized side of me is going, no, can't do that. I just read another story.
I'll throw something out here.
All right, go ahead.
Bob, how do you... how do you synthesize the lizard brain and the more civilized brain, because you can't sublimate the lizard brain. The lizard brain is part of, I mean, it's all one brain. So,
well, no, I mean, go ahead, Larry.
There's the amygdala, and they tell you that you should think before you act on the amygdala, and you know use the prefrontal cortex of the brain. But the reality is that we all have the amygdala. So how do you deal with the fact that you've got both of those? I mean, they both have.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the question I'm asking. I mean, do you just haul these freaks off somewhere? Do you pass a law that says it's illegal to pamphleteer in the bar district in Wuppertal? I mean, I don't know. And I guess it's kind of none of our business because none of us in this conversation are German. But there are, you know, there are free speech and assembly issues that are in play here.
Bob, this is Sal. I mean, I guess I've taken the position for quite some time that there's plenty of opportunity to take positions.
Can I interrupt for 1 minute? Can I interrupt? I gotta go. But I want to know, Sal, did you get the pistachios and the cheese?
I had not gotten them as of yesterday. I haven't been home yet. I'm still finishing up work. But I'll see if they came in the mail today. I'm really looking forward to them.
Okay. Well, my ride just pulled up.
Okay.
I gotta go, guys.
All right. Happy trails, Sparky.
Okay. Bye.
Night,
Sparky. Bye.
Bye,
Sparky.
But what I was saying, Bob, is, you know, I guess, you know, I'm not sure whether I'm an isolationist or not, and we could talk about what that would mean potentially, but there's plenty of things going on in this country right here, this adopted country of mine, that deserve all kinds of our attention, and it just seems to make more sense to me that that whole host and list of things is rightfully our business here and deserving of our attention, probably and possibly before anything that's going on somewhere else that's not in this country. That's kind of my basic position, I think, on what you asked.
That's kind of my default, Sal, because it all falls under the general rubric of mind your own business, which was sort of drilled into me from infancy. And so the question becomes, how do we convey that idea to people who are answering to their lizard brains and demanding that we start raining bombs and death down? Because, see, there's no such thing as smart bombing or precision bombing. Any decision to, and you know, we're already doing it. Any decision to bomb that bunch is by definition going to mean that we're going to be killing innocent civilians, dot, 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 again.
Yes.
Oh, I see what's going on.
Yes.
So,
Sal
and Bob, how does Germany, I haven't been following the thread of the conversation probably, but what is Germany doing? Because I know what America wants to do as far as these journalists are concerned, and I'm really against it. So how does Germany figure into all this? I'm sorry.
Well, you've got the story that Patrick sent us early this evening. Adherents of the Islamic State people, they're called Salafists or Salafists, Salafi Islam, have taken to, and God only knows why it's Wuppertal and not Cologne, but it is other places as well. They're walking around the bar district and train station in this multicultural city of 350,000, leafleting and hassling people, telling them that Allah does not want them to go drink a beer. You know, I just want to put a memo out to the Muslim fundamentalists. You're never going to win a convert in Germany telling them that Allah doesn't want them to drink beer.
That's like
Fundy's proselytizing in France saying Allah doesn't want you to drink wine. Now, granted, the Quran does forbid, as I have read it in translation, the consumption of alcohol. That's one of the reasons I will never be a Muslim.
Although I will add though that the word that's used in the classical 6th century Arabic to describe what that thing is has multiple translations that include other interpretations than ethyl grain alcohol, for example, for what it's worth.
That's fascinating. I've never heard that before, Sal. Any idea what those, I mean, can you give us any idea what those other translations are?
Not on the spot, but I've encountered those kinds of discussions before.
I mean,
happy to do some more research.
That would be fascinating, because I can well imagine it. Maybe there's another translation in which it means don't drink bong water. And, you know, that's one of those I can follow without a problem at all.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly say that there's definitely a thread of thought historically that says it's more of a general intoxicant, right? And so in that sense, maybe it's even more strict, right, than alcohol, right? But it's still worth the debate to kind of look and analyze from a historical Arabic perspective and the evolution of language and etymology and whatnot. And the bottom line is that the Salafists who basically, you know, the modern Wahhabis sprouted from the, I actually hate using the word modern and Wahhabi in the same sentence. It's kind of
you and T.E. Lawrence.
Exactly. The contemporary Wahhabi sprouted from that ultra-Orthodox Salafist tradition, which is as old as or older than any caliphate that has ever existed, right? And so there's always been this very conservative Salafist versus the more moderate Sufis and Hanafis and others. So, but you know, to more directly answer your question about what should be done about leaflets, absolutely nothing.
No, but it's not about leaflets. They're walking around with leaflets and they're hassling people, saying, you know, in the name of Allah, you should not drink alcohol. Allah commands you not to have a beer. Don't participate in pornography. You know, and they're just hassling people.
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of like
Well,
kind of like even creepier Moonies.
Yeah. I hear you. So I would ask, I'll have one more thing, and then I actually got to go on mute and listen for a few minutes, which is, you know, if you go to the ultra-Orthodox Jewish neighborhoods in Brooklyn, and you go to the edges of those neighborhoods that are interfacing with non-Hasidim and ultra-Orthodox areas, I've heard, I don't know how true it is, but I've heard that there are, you know, groups of ultra-Orthodox Jewish men going around doing very similar things to what you just described.
I have no doubt whatsoever, Sal. Because Lord knows.
So I'll just leave it at that, and I'll tell you.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, Sal.
I'm,
I really do.
I'm muting myself.
Okay. No, because I mean, I know from my upbringing, for instance, in a dry county, that every time we'd have a referendum on the sale of alcohol, you would get the Citizens for Decency and Morality, which took up money in all the churches that generally didn't speak to each other the rest of the time. They'd pool their cash behind this organization to keep alcohol from being legalized in the county. And, of course, this inured to the benefit of the local bootleggers, who were merely black market retailers of Tennessee tax stamp booze instead of alcohol. Or instead of Alabama. And they would pamphlet and they would leafleteer. The difference being that when you're going up and scaring people, and from the article, these assholes are doing exactly that, then, you know, I mean, when they're donning vests and declaring, the bar district a Sharia law zone, and apparently, because there was a link inside the Deutsche Welle story that I was reading, apparently there are other things that are sort of simmering along in Germany as well. There's a story of a town in Nordrhein-Westfalia called Bielefeld, and I've been through there. Beautiful place, you know. Some Yazidis protested or took, you know, just went out to the town square to freely express themselves about what was being done to the Yazidis by Islamic State, and some Salafist adherents of that bunch came along and brought knives and started cutting on them.
Oh, my God. Bob, why do we always hear about the religious right in the media? There's a religious left, too, and they're, you know...
Because if it bleeds, it leads, Larry.
You know, they're...
There's not a lot of news. Jim Wallace is not creating a lot of news stories because he's just out there going about the business of trying to lead a Christ-like life and do what he understands the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, wanted done. Besides that, they don't have the megaphone that the right wing does. Any given day at Right Wing Watch, there's almost always a clip from either Chappie Klingenschmidt or Pat Robertson or some other one of these right wing freaks, you know, saying something awful.
Yeah.
And the thing is, there's as compared to so-called left-wing Christianity, there's a whole bunch more of the right-wing variety. And they're noisier. I mean, even in the case of this mild-mannered reality television star that I ran into last night. You know, I'm just carrying on a conversation, and he just decides he can jump right in and tell us that Jesus is our Lord and Savior. And, you know, I was gentle. I didn't say what was on my mind. I didn't turn to him and say, stop with the stupid religious drivel.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but if you've got a Klingenschmitt, you better get a garden hose and wash that off, you know.
That stuff's like flesh-eating bacteria.
You know. Yeah. But my thoughts on the thing that's going on in Germany, I can tell you a story here from the little town here. We had this crazy guy. You know, he's fairly young. He's probably in his 30s. And, you know, evangelical. I mean, just rabid. You know, drives around in a minivan that's covered in, you know, Save the Fetuses and, you know, all those stickers all over it. And, you know, when his family piles out of it, you know, they stand in a single file line and look like a staircase. But this guy, he would go out there all the time and stand on the corner next to the traffic lights with his, you know, his big sign for whatever he's wanting to scream about that day. And he'd be out there, you know, screaming and spitting and, I mean, you know, full on, scary, you know, rabies type activity.
Yeah, the guy in Life of Brian who's and there shall be blood in the streets. Yeah, those guys.
But more intense. And, you know, everybody, well, the few people who actually walked in anywhere in the town would just, you know, you go to the other side of the street and you don't make eye contact. And eventually the guy got the message that nobody was going to listen to him. I mean, you know, sometimes he would, you know, if you did walk on the side of the street that he was on, you know, he might get a little too close for comfort, but pretty much everybody just ignored him. And, you know, eventually he went away.
You know,
so Kevin, I would say as long as these guys in Germany, you know, don't break any laws, everybody should just ignore them. Don't interact with them. Yeah, you know, and they'll.
Yeah, but when they come, when
they'll get tired eventually.
I don't necessarily know if that the Westboro Baptist Church, Devin, doesn't seem to have gotten tired. They're still calling on Phil Robertson to come on and say, force them to convert or die. And I don't know that.
Yeah, but nobody's ignored them. I mean, you know, they're constantly being, you know, plastered all over the place on TV. And, I mean, you know, it's not 2 weeks goes by that, you know, you don't have a story of them on, you know, some national network. I mean, they're not being ignored.
Well, you know, Bob, we used to have in Berkeley, we used to have a guy when I first got here in 75, a guy named Holy Hubert. He used to stand out there on Sproul Hall, used to spout the stuff, and people used to give him a really hard time. I guess he used to take it as a challenge. But he used to get beaten up all the time, and then he would, with blood coming out of his mouth, I heard that he was said, I love you, brother. I mean, these are people. You know, I don't know why somebody would want to do that kind of thing, but you know, people will stand out there and just
that's the thing. There are just nasty examples of members of the human race out there. One of the things that I saw rolling around in the last few days of my enforced silence was, and you knew it was bound to happen sooner or later, it was associated with the ice bucket challenge, which I hope seems to be finally fading away.
Yeah.
But it was, there was a little autistic boy. And he was touched by the ice bucket challenge, and he wanted to participate. So a couple of boys said,
"Welcome to Ohio."
So a couple of boys said, "Yeah, we'll help you." And he thought they were going to pour ice water on him, and they dumped a bucket of urine and feces on him instead.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that happened right up here in Bay Village, just one of the suburbs of Cleveland, Bob.
Oh, no kidding, Todd. I didn't know where it had happened.
Rather upper-class suburb. Upper-class
suburb. Oh, so it was a 1%.
More likely, yeah.
Yeah, it's on the lake. It's pretty upper-class over there. I'm not saying everyone is. Obviously, in a city, small town, not everyone ever is, but that is a upper-class Bay Village.
Skull and Bones.
You don't get
Skull and Bones trainees, then.
Yeah, you don't get in without the proper proper uniform of khakis and your proper colored polo shirt, driving a BMW. Then you're not from around here, are you, boy?
That's nasty. And these were upper class. That's really
yes, unfortunately
nasty.
I didn't, but I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, Bob. Please.
No, you didn't interrupt. I mean, there's that Bible verse where Yeshua says, "The poor you have always with you." And as I've noted before, he doesn't say how people are poor. He doesn't. I don't think he necessarily. You know, the man spoke in riddles and parables and stuff. Poor what? Poor conscience, poor mentality, poor ethics, poor morals. You know, because that verse could just as easily be translated, mean people suck. Which is one of my favorite bumper
yeah,
stickers.
Yeah, I think that's very valid. Right. But yeah, it's been all over the news here with... you know, it was a bucket of urine, feces, cigarette butts, and he waited in the driveway. And
oh, they took video of it.
Were up on. Yeah, yeah, and there was these bullies got up on the roof of the garage, and he thought it was ice. You know, going to be the ice water, and it was this bucket full of literally crap that they dumped on him, and there was videos, and I think that was what the. Father of the autistic child managed to see or told him about it, and then he went and checked out the video and went to the police with the bullying charge or whatever, and it's being investigated now. So yeah, things are still kind of up in the air as to how they'll what's going to happen to it, whether he gets out of it due to affluenza or the kids get out of it due to affluenza, who knows.
Well, that was what I was about to say, Todd. They're checking to see the bottom line of the family's IRA, the 1040 form. If it's sufficient.
Sad but true.
Yeah.
More than like.
Well, it's kind of like the kid at Steubenville High School who raped that young woman last year and who is now back to playing football for the fighting assholes or whatever Steubenville High School are.
Oh yeah, and got cheers when he got back onto the first game. I think it was last weekend when he got out onto the field was cheered onto the field.
That's gross.
Well, both no, Larry, that's America.
Disgusting. Just purely disgusting.
Well, it's more than disgusting. It's assault.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm talking about the Steubenville thing as well.
Yeah, and those kids didn't even ask themselves whether or not that was whether or not that really, stop. Okay.
Yeah. Let me share this with you. The commentary out of Deutsche Welle that mentioned what went on in Bielefeld is written by a man named Kirsten Knipp. I don't know. If, I don't know. Maybe it's a silent K. Nip, knip. I don't know. But he closes his piece saying, and I think this is really food for thought. I'd never looked at it this way before. It is only just becoming clear that fundamentalism is not something that can be explained by Islamic culture. Ponder that for a moment. Because if fundamentalism was endemic and limited to Islamic culture, we wouldn't have Phil Robertson or the ginseng guru out there proselytizing either on in the case of the latter on Fox or in the case of the former at the Rippy Mart. You follow?
Or any of the family values conservatives. Well, I guess it depends on, you know, what type of law Germany has, but it would seem to me, in my logical brain, take it for what it's worth, that if they're out there and they're labeled as police and they're, you know, getting into the face and harassing people, there should be something buried in and amongst the centuries of law books someplace that there's something that they could do about it. Now, you know, again, I don't know, but it just seems that something should be there, you know, for the constabulary forces to fall back on and stop that shit from happening. They want to get on the train platforms or outside the bars or whatever and hand out their pamphlets. That's one thing. But if they're, you know, imitating, you know, the Sharia law police threatening people, it seems to me there should be something there.
Yeah.
And I get tired of the media painting all particular people in one brush because there are a lot of really wonderful, you know, I mean they just paint all, you know, people who believe in Islam in this country right now as being, you know, there's a witch hunt against Islamic folks, which should not be going on, but the media creates it, and the politicians play to it, because it's beneficial to their particular self-interest, and they can justify going to war on it, and it makes me sick. It really makes me sick because there are a lot of really good people all over the world. And they don't talk about the fact that there are liberal folks and there are moderate folks everywhere. You know, I mean, I know I'm saying the obvious, and I know I'm being terribly simplistic, but you know, I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of what I hear in the media all the time around. I'm really fed up. My brain is broken. I'm sorry.
Well, there's a
good Devin.
There's a witch hunt on anybody who isn't a wealthy WASP. I mean that's really what it boils down to at this point. I mean if you're not one of the people with affluenza, who happens to be, you know, the right color and, you know, wear the right clothes and drive the right cars, then, you know, you're all the same to them.
Yeah, you can't paint all of those folks that have money as being necessarily, you know, rotten people. I mean, I know we're all part of a racist, sexist, you know, classist, religionist society. And we all, while we individually may not be, contributing to it, but if we keep on supporting the social institutions and cultural institutions and economic institutions, and those keep on getting perpetuated, we're perpetuating it as a whole.
You well, know, what this German writer concludes after saying, fundamentalism is not something that can be explained by Islamic culture, he continues, the culture is itself highly pluralistic, and there are many ways to interpret it. And then this, fundamentalists are the last people that should be relied upon to do so. I mean, these are really simple sentences that are just freighted with meaning. He continues, extremism, and here's, I mean, here's one to just fold your legs into the lotus position and ponder for an evening. Extremism is a product of modernity. It is the handiwork of ideologues who understand one thing, that nothing, be it political or divine, can compete with the absolute doctrine of salvation. The culture of extremists is nothing more than a refusal to question their own worldview, nor do they respect the rights of others. Extremists should be given no let-off, not even if they come from abroad. To decisively confront them is no form of racism. No one knows that better than the Yazidis protesting against the murders of their fellow believers by jihadists. The true racism would be to stand to one side out of a false sense of tolerance.
I understand what he's saying, I think. He's saying, you know, if you, it's like, who is it that Marcuse was talking about that because the United States is so tolerant, it's also repressive because it also tolerates it also puts extreme points of view on the same continuum level as moderate points of view and asks people to consider them equally and having equal validity. Maybe that's not what he said, but you know, that's what I'd like to think that he said. But if that's false. That's what I think. Yeah, because you're saying, well, we have to, you know, it's like the cultural relativism argument that Michael Parenti was writing about. He was writing, I guess he said, you know, some in anthropology now people are saying, well, we can't really judge another culture. So if it's normative for another culture to go and commit genocide against its members, and if it's normal for one culture to have different cultural practices, even if we think that those cultural practices are destructive, we have to look at those particular cultural practices equally and be tolerant of them. I wish I could be more succinct, but that's... You know about cultural relativism, don't you, Bob?
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we're supposed to check for, anthropologists are supposed to check for bias and, you know, not be judgmental and all that kind of stuff. But there are some practices that some cultures do. I mean, you want to tolerate Hitler just because it was... culturally normative at one time to...
Well, right, and of course, this brings into sharp relief the words of Phil Robertson the other day that I'm no more a homophobe than Jesus was. Did you catch that one?
For Christ's sake.
No, I must have missed that one. I saw him on the news here just saying, you know, with the comment that you made earlier about convert or die, which, you know, always kind of made me wonder, well, you know, get those boys of yours to stop making duck calls and send them out there on the front lines and, you know, see who comes back. But, you know,
but Todd,
you know,
Todd, we joke about that, but even that has its serious dangerous side. I read a story the other day about how some of these border fanatics, these right-wing border fanatics with their freedom protectors, they invaded and assaulted a group of scientists working in the desert because they presumed that they must be illegals. Fortunately, no one was killed. Meanwhile,
that's interesting.
Meanwhile, down in South Texas, an outfit is recruiting disaffected young men to come and join a militia whose purpose they say is a militia. One, it's a gang. Okay, first of all this talk of militias. No, quit using that word to describe these gangs. They are gangs. And their stated purpose was to go down and fight the drug cartels. And it's gotten bad enough. It's gotten bad enough that warnings have gone out from law enforcement down that way. If you know anybody, get them back home. They are in grave danger. These are people who are signing. These are people who are signing up with these ad hoc gangs, and they're being given semi-automatic weapons. This is America, 2014.
Bob, is there any way to give people massive collective psychotherapy? I mean, this is crazy.
And that's I mean, I mentioned that because of what Kirsten Knipp wrote here. Extremism is a product of modernity. It's a product of people who cannot bear to live in a pluralistic society. And as he also notes, it's not an Islamic thing. It's not a Christian thing. And this, and the reason I bring it up is it sort of confirms something I've said for years. It's a fundamentalism thing. And it's kind of in the direction that Sal was going a few minutes ago, too. It is fundamentalism. I had never considered it as a product of modernity. But if you think about it, almost every time some sort of fundamentalism rises up, it is in a reactionary, it's a reactionary response to some form of what is understood as human progress. Look at fundamentalist Christianity.
That's a very true statement.
And you can go back to T.E. and I mentioned T.E. Lawrence when Sal was talking. If you go back and read Seven Pillars of Wisdom that he wrote, he has and Sal was right, Wahhabism, which is the dominant sect in Saudi Arabia that winds up with speed dealers getting their heads cut off, Wahhabism arises out of Salafism. And in the Seven Pillars of Wisdom, which is based on T.E. Lawrence's experience in Arabia, you know, as Lawrence of Arabia, he has this passage that I read years ago about Wahhabism. And he says, it rises and falls like a tide in the Islamic world until it crashes upon the shores of modernity and civilization. And it's been a receding and an advancing tide ever since that point in time. It is it's a product of the fear of sects that they will be rendered moot or meaningless, more meaningless than they already are. It is a confession, isn't it? Fundamentalism is a confession of the meinginglessness of whatever fundamentalist creed is being advocated. Okay, so we got about 16 minutes left in the program. I want to work this in here. What if I told you of a story of a young woman who was forced to wear a bright orange costume because authorities had determined that her black skirt was too short? Tell me what country that happened in. Was it Syria? Was it Iraq? Was it Pakistan? She was forced to dress in public in an orange costume to draw attention that she was an inappropriately dressing female. She is 15 years old.
That sounds like some of the
alternative or quote unquote creative punishments that a lot, can't say a lot. Some judges do here in the good old U.S. of America.
Well, you win, Todd.
The problem is.
You win,
well,
Todd.
Well, I was going to say the problem is you could, it could be any one of those countries, though.
It's Oak Leaf.
Plus,
it is Oak Leaf.
It could be ours.
It is Oak Leaf Public High School in Clay County, Florida. A 15-year-old girl's family had moved from Seattle, Washington to Clay County, Florida only 8 days before school started. She was unaware of the dress code. Her black skirt was one...
I'm sorry.
What?
I may have missed this at the beginning, but does it mention what whether she was white or a few shades darker?
She is white, 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 white.
Oh, okay. Well, I was surprised.
You know,
I was expecting her to be an African American, but okay, please continue. Sorry to interrupt.
So she goes to this public high school, and the public high school has a dress code saying that female students' skirts can be no higher than 3 inches above the knee. Hers was 4 inches above the knee. And so they got out this bright orange, baggy ensemble and forced her to wear it to classes after they measured her skirt and found it to be insufficiently, chaste.
The family should sue.
Diana Larkin, the mother of the child, is referring to it as a shame suit.
That's exactly right. She's right. And the poor 15-year-old, she has to tolerate that kind of humiliation and that trauma.
Can you imagine
doing anything wrong?
Can you imagine going from an arguably civilized place like Seattle, Washington, to this place? Now, she wasn't behaving inappropriately. She wasn't being sexually promiscuous, whatever that means, because of course all. But see, this is fundamentalism, okay? School boards that aren't run by fundamentalists don't pass these kinds of rules. When ABC News called the school district to find out about it, the school district said, students who violate the dress code are allowed to choose one of three options. They can have a parent bring them a change of decent clothes. They can stay in their clothes and take an in-school suspension. Or they can put on the T-shirt and sweatpants, you know, the shame suit. Meanwhile, the young woman said, no, I was given only one choice, put on the shame suit. And so
If you're given all the... even if you're given the options... You know, somebody says you can have A, B, or we really recommend C by the powers that be. That's a pretty easy way of influencing that decision also.
Well, why do these rules exist if there is not a pre-existing determination that a female's choice of clothing is somehow a threat to public order? There is underlying this a presumption that women are responsible for the sexuality of men, and that, by God, is why women have to wear beekeeper suits in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Saudi Arabia. But these, by God, are Christians.
Damn it, Bobby, beat me by just a few seconds. I was going to say it was just protecting her from getting raped later on. Yeah, you know, because it's all about what you wear.
Well, meanwhile, once the matter hit the fan, the lawyer for the school district got involved. The lawyer said, the outfit is not displaying a discipline record to the public. If we took off the words, the other students would still know the prison orange T-shirts were for dress code violations. I think the practice is okay. They're lucky we're not making them wear prison orange suits.
Oh, fuck that. Excuse me. Fuck that lawyer.
That's such a thin line between high school and prison.
School to prison pipeline, Todd.
That's
exactly what I was thinking, Bob.
You know, and Todd, that's exactly how some of the vice principals and the history teachers and the PE teachers and all that in high school treat the students.
And you know,
and
bear in mind, this young woman is 15 years old. She's probably, I'm guessing, a 10th grader.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So she's got 3 full years in this fundamentalist hellhole. And
now mute.
She's got 3 years in this fundamentalist hellhole, and her parents are raising a stink, or her parent, only the mother is referred to. I don't know if it's a two-parent family or what. They are raising a stink, and you know what? In churches all over Clay County, Florida, they'll be talking about the sinful harlot family that moved here and wants to destroy our family values.
Jesus, excuse my language.
Well, Bob, I wanted to mention, you know, when you began that story, my mind went straight back to the Scarlet Letter.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yes, which indeed. Was an original instantiation of basically this country's origins when it comes to women's sexuality, to their rights, and to slut shaming.
Well, and that's why I kind of created the loop that I did, Sal. For every Fundy Christian who says them barbarians is a cutting off heads, well, there's a Phil Robertson, or there's a Clay County High School, and the path that leads to the head lopping runs through dress codes for women, runs through people hassling people trying to drink a beer outside the train station.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't understand. Well, I do understand it, and it's silly. But Pat Robertson, if you're talking about Phil Robertson or Pat, are they the same?
No, Phil.
Person.
Phil is the duck. Duck doofus, the guy who's made millions making a device that makes ducks think he wants to have sex with them.
Oh, okay. Well, that's why I don't know too much about popular culture, except for music. But anyway. Okay. Well, they're both idiots.
Yeah.
Idiots. They just don't manipulate their audience, that's all.
About the prisons and schools, I mean, you construct the schools in an architectural manner where they look just like prisons, you run them like prisons, and you know, the high school up here, there's a state police barracks inside the high school.
Yeah, because after all teenagers are delinquents, right?
And
I'm being sarcastic.
Essentially it's just training for prison.
You know, Devin, it's funny you say that.
Training for the fascist existence.
Well, I did take a quick look.
It's funny you say that.
I took a quick look to find out where Clay County, Florida is. It is to the immediate southwest of the greater Jacksonville, Florida area.
Of course.
And I guess... I guess the county seat is Clay.
Well, you know, Bob, in San Diego or north of San Diego, there was a situation years ago where a woman during a dance or a prom looked at every woman to see whether or not she was wearing a thong underneath her prom dress. And if she had a thong, they were humiliated and not allowed to go to the prom. These are teenagers. You know, they're just trying to, you know, have fun and you know, have a good time. And they're following along with the fashions and all that stuff. And that's not cool to do to teenagers. And
well,
this
that's
vice,
assault.
You know, well, this vice principal was, you know, decided in some place and was inspecting underneath prom dresses for thongs. So it happens here too. And that happens to be a pretty conservative upscale area from what I understand. It was really annoying. Oh.
Well, you gotta figure that Oakleaf High School is, a fairly well-to-do outfit because it's just it looks like one, two, three, three blocks off of the beach in Orange Park, Florida. It's suburban Jacksonville with a population of 8,400 people. It has a road named Doctors Lake Drive. So I can well imagine the makeup of the school board. It is, after all, Florida. Kind of a pity that Jay Cruzan didn't hear. He could probably give us a skinny on this.
Yeah. Well,
darn, we are. Yeah, I guess the doctors doesn't have anything to do with doctors because there's Doctors Inlet too. So, oh well. Well, thanks everybody for joining in on this return to air. We have had a successful broadcast. Hallelujah, praise Jesus. And we'll be back with more on Monday. Thanks to everybody who helped toward getting us out of the hole. It really, and thanks for meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. I always get a note from Shirley telling me how happy she is to see the challenge met. Thanks to Philip and Michael and Beth and Nancy and Kate and Diane and Richard, Kelly and Gail and Chris and Jack and Kathy and Ed. Thank you, one and all. Thank you to Robin. Thank you again to Philip. Thank you to Randy. And thank you to Steve. It has been a big help in keeping this all going, especially during one of these little weird times when we wind up being off the air. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Enjoy your time away, Sparky. It's a well-deserved evening off. And so I'll wish you all a very happy weekend and look forward to talking to you on Monday. Bye now.